The Insurance Coffee House is hosted by Insurance Search. Insurance Search provides executive recruitment services to insurance companies, brokers, and insurtechs in the UK and across the United States, attracting and retaining the most successful leaders to your insurance business. To find out more, visit insurance-search.com. The Insurance Coffee House, the place where you get to meet and be inspired by the most successful insurance business leaders from across the world. Hosted by Nick Hoadley, CEO of Insurance Search.
Welcome to the Insurance Coffee House. Today, I'm very happy to be joined by Christina Parr. Christina is the head of global talent acquisition, learning and development, and organizational development at the Argo Group. Christina joins me on the line from Austin, Texas this morning. Great to have you on the show, Christina.
Thank you. Happy to be here. Pleasure.
Christina, great to have you on the show. Really looking forward to hearing more about what's going on there at Argo, some of the opportunity. I know there's been a lot of noise in the market recently. So before we get on to that, though, we are in the Insurance Coffee House today. I know you're over there in Austin, Texas this morning. As we are in the Insurance Coffee House today, what's your go-to coffee of choice this morning?
I do like a spot of espresso, and the bonus is that it burns calories.
Great stuff. And that's why I'm an espresso drinker as well, actually. Healthy and gives you that caffeine fix. Christina, before we talk about Argo and obviously the acquisition with Brookfield, could you give our listeners a little bit of an overview of your career background, your career journey? And what's led you into the position that you have there at Argo Group now?
Yes, briefly, I spent quite a bit of time working in the East, and I did that with high tech, also worked in oil and gas, and really with quite a bit of reluctance came to insurance, was recruited for about a year with conversations and such, until I really understood what was happening in the future of insurance, insurtech, fintech, all of really what was happening, what was new. I wasn't all that excited. So it really took my education of the future of this business to get me comfortable.
It's such a great point. And we speak to a lot of people that when they move into the industry, previously they had no idea of what those opportunities were. I think as a market, we should be doing more around that. You know, headhunters, search practitioners should definitely be doing that. But I think we can do more as a wider industry. How are you finding the transition? How are you enjoying the world of insurance?
Love it. It's addictive. I understand now why we tend to talk to a lot of the folks who have vast experience in the market. I also now can see how this experience, specifically in specialty insurance, breeds better, more, you know, deeper conversations. And sometimes we also have to keep ourselves in check with that bias, because if we get too heavy on referrals and, you know, get lazy, if you will, and we don't dig deep for underrepresented talent, it's easy to fall into just kind of staying with the folks that you've known for so long. So we really make that a goal of ours. And we've done a number of things to make sure that we are connecting with underrepresented talent. At the same time, we do balance it with great referrals. And we average about 20% of our hires as referrals. So we do certainly appreciate and nod to that amazing experience that's in the market. At the same time, you know, trying to balance.
That is often the conundrum for firms. Often those referrals can seem like very safe bets, but from a diversity and bringing in new people into organization, into the industry, there's a counterbalance there. So it's often a fine line, but it sounds like you've got a nice mix of things there. In your role there, so we talked about being the head for talent acquisition, but also then for learning and organizational development as well. Could you share a little bit more about how each of those roles operate and how that hangs together there?
Throughput is really exciting when you connect those three areas. And I know it's an unusual connection. And, you know, I nod and thank our leaders for acknowledging that connection. So what does that ecosystem look like? One, how do we make sure that we are branching out and seeking underrepresented talent and talent also who have amazing experience? So we do that in our acquisition process as folks flow into the organization, now we're developing them, and hopefully we're developing them to grow within the organization, regardless of where they happen to come in at from a skill perspective. And then as we look at the organization and how it's developing, we have a lot of touch points, about a dozen at least, that we ask employees from a pulse perspective, how are we doing? What can we do better? What do we need to provide to you to serve you and the organization better? So we're constantly, one, seeking differences in talent. We're applying those differences in the development and then building upon that. And then that's making our organization even better.
And that's so important. One of the things we wanted to do actually on this series of the podcast is really to look at that journey. I've been very fortunate to interview CEOs, founders of businesses, and they might talk about how they're going to hire 1,000 people in the following year or double in size the following year. Move on to the next subject, but it's really about getting under the bonnet. You know, how do you make that successful? How do you hire great people? How do you make sure you retain those people? How do you build that culture there? How do you also make sure that you're hiring from lots of different places as well? So it sounds like your role, you're really bringing that together, and it's not a silo position. It can sometimes be like.
That's right. I think certainly in larger organizations, as I've been there, when you have those distinct lines of this is what I do, it can often breed, exactly as you say, silos. And our leadership team, headed by Jessica Buss at this point, and our executives have said very, very clearly in this transformational process, we're breaking down silos. So the way things have been, the traditions, we want to try things in different ways. So by doing that, I think it makes us far more effective. And then you might ask, well, how do you know if you're effective? We actually partner with a third party who brings to us about 10 million data points that are from around the globe. And we use those benchmarks to compare our employee engagement results. And we have been, for the last 5 surveys, going up and up and up, which is quite remarkable, not to humble brag on ourselves, but I do think, you know, if someone else was telling me a story about this, I would say that's quite unusual that you're going through strategic alternatives for years, and you're also having discussions about how to improve your results, of course. And through that process, you still increase your engagement results. That doesn't seem right. And if we didn't have a third party validating that, I might ask the question as well. So I do think that's quite a remarkable feat from a cultural perspective when you look at the results.
Like you say, very rare indeed. And I think it's just so important that whatever stage of a business is in, whatever period it is in its timeline, that the core focusing on the culture and internally the people within the existing business is so important. I think so many companies take their eye off that when they are looking at some of those alternatives, those strategic alternatives. The acquisition by Brookfield, I think that was announced around about 3 months ago now. What does that mean for the business? What can you tell me about that?
It's exciting. We are, you know, transforming, and we couldn't wait, really. I think most people in the organization were eagerly anticipating this transformation. And once the buy was completed, the organization got busy, one, listening to people. So, you know, there was an entire tour of listening. And that meant that our executive team not only presented the direction, the expected direction, but more importantly, listen to people. What's going well? What's not going well? What do we need to change? Please share your perspectives, because you are what is most critical to this organization and the future of our success. So I very much appreciated that perspective. So certainly values are being revisited to make sure that everyone understands that integrity is first. We want to make sure that we are thinking entrepreneurially and also making sure that we break those silos down, as you had mentioned. So we keep that in play while we are transitioning the business to 3 towers. And those 3 towers include casualty, financial lines, and surety as the second one. And then the third is specialty lines.
So it's had a really positive effect on the business. You know, clearly Brookfield, from the outside perspective, an amazing partner and an amazing organization to now be a part of. How are things going? I know it's early days.
It is early days. And what's happening right now, as you can well imagine, we have a focus on the right people in the right spots with the right skills, of course, right? A little bit of Jim Collins in a way, right? You got to get the right people on the bus before you start going anywhere. So that's a classic and it makes sense today, right? So certainly we've had some shifts in how we have our talent positioned. We've also promoted a great deal of people. We, on average, you know, 1 out of 10 are getting a promotion in some way, shape, or form. So that's very exciting. Of course, we'd like to see that increase. We're interested in doing that. One of the things we've also been working with our socioeconomic ERG employee resource group, how do we make sure that we give plenty of people a chance to succeed who may not be traditional in their background? So similar to what we were talking with around underrepresented talent, how do we connect with them? How do we then train them, give them the right skills? And then how do we promote them, thereby making the organization more healthy and sustainable? Yeah. So one thing we have been able to accomplish is about a third of our roles do not require a degree now. So that's a big change. You know, many times actually in most companies, you've got the requirement for not even one, but plus, let's say a degree, specialty, certifications, master's degrees. You know, you think about this and think about the investment in time and resources. And often you can see why, fortunately, we're not getting underrepresented talent. So we've worked very hard with that employee resource group to start to shift that.
Something that we're heavily involved in on a day-to-day basis, but I really think that when you bring down those barriers to entry on roles, increasing the talent pool, making it a more inclusive process actually brings more talent and a better quality of talent to the table. So actually, as well as, you know, hiring more diversity and giving more people an opportunity, the end result normally on a search is get a better quality candidate. When we look at things like referrals, there might be one or two people in line for a position, but if you've got 7 or 8, 9, 10 people all in the mix for a position, a much better interview process. You can be a lot more selective with who you bring into the organization. And I think that raises the standards across the board. How is that going so far? I know you've got several employee resource groups there. How are you finding that that's helping to bring in talent, but also develop that talent as well?
Yes, it's a massive connection. We have 8 employee resource groups, and they range from Pride, socioeconomic, I already mentioned, a disability group. Heroes include Marine. So I should say any service, as well as branch of service, as well as paramedics. You know, it could be anyone providing service. So our Heroes group, we have the Working Families group. I happen to be a co-chair of that group. The groups go on. One of them certainly is connected to ethnicity, you know, another with gender. So I think what we do is we can see the intersection of where all these groups come together. And it's certainly with our hiring processes. So you might ask yourself, well, how are you doing with gender, for example? And frankly, we think we're doing pretty well. We're at about 60% ladies and 40% men as self-reported. So, you know, that's something that's interesting to us because maybe that's a little bit harder in our industry since it's been a bit more on the other side in the past. So we do pride ourselves on bringing in different talent and working hard to make sure that we keep that in line. One of the ways we do that is as we are interviewing, we make sure that we have a panel of people who are varied in their background, in their thinking, and their approach. So, you know, that way we're not too homogenous, right, in how we are looking at candidates.
I think that's great. And it becomes very self-fulfilling then, because if you've got people within the organization and you've got either case studies or you've got the data point that you can refer to and actually say, actually, from underrepresented groups, there is a great career opportunity here. I think it's very important as part of the interview process, but also as well for firms, if you're, you know, looking to bring people in, someone who's maybe happy in their role at the moment for another competitor or for another business, you need to be sure that they are going to go on and have a fruitful career there. And it's not a tick box exercise. So it's very, very important. And that breeds more and more diversity to the business. And you say 20% come through referrals. You know, if you've got a diverse workforce there, then a lot of those referrals are going to be diverse in nature as well, which is fantastic. In terms of looking forward as a business, clearly great news on the Brookfield front. How would you describe opportunities there now at Argo Group to people listening to this podcast? If they're considering an opportunity at Argo, what would be your pitch to them?
Well, I think the future is exciting. We have Brookfield now as really a driver of our future. And as I look at their portfolio and I examine their business, that's exciting. I mean, a lot of success. I was just looking over the Brookfield Re results and, you know, had to reach out and congratulate for those results. And that's a very tough market, as everyone here knows. And the market's not getting any less complex. So very exciting to see those results. Of course, they are in many different business areas. And we get to be the arm of specialty that they otherwise did not have. So that is something that, as we think about integration and as we think about breaking down silos, you know, and opening up other possibilities, I think Brookfield is doing it. And then we get the advantage of the same, right? The same type of thinking. I firmly believe, I think all of my team members, colleagues firmly believe this future is nothing but bright. And that's because, not that we're foolish in how we look at these things, obviously, we're looking very closely at results. We're looking very closely at business moves, strategic moves, and we're seeing how that will all play into better results.
Thank you for that, Christina. Brings us nicely onto the espresso round now, where the questions are short, sharp, to the point. Are you ready for the espresso round?
Let's go.
The espresso round.
Christina, what would be your one recommendation to an executive or a leader coming in to interview at Argo?
Do your research. And that seems so basic, sometimes table stakes. However, you would be surprised at the number of people that we speak to and we say, you know, tell us a little bit about what you understand about Argo. Help us understand your backdrop. What did you learn when you were researching? And even through this process of strategic alternatives, it was surprising to me the number of folks who were completely unaware of what was happening. So that's a bit heartbreaking, because if a person comes unprepared, not a good look, right?
I actually think it really feeds back to your earlier point about widening the talent pool for an opportunity. I think when there is sometimes just a purely a referral or someone that someone knows, I think sometimes people are a little bit flat and they think they've got the role already because they've got a recommendation. Whereas you really want people who are really hungry, who really get the business, who really get the opportunity. It means that you can be more selective yourself when it comes to that. Very interesting. Looking across the board to your peers now, other HR executives, other executive leaders in the people space, what would be your number one tip for hiring great talent?
Have a swift, solid process. And it's interesting to me because we do get feedback. Many people go to Glassdoor. We also look at competitors and how they're doing from a process. And you have to balance. It's an auditable process, of course, always. It's a hot market. So, you know, we have to make sure that we do have something that's solid. We also have to make sure that we move fast because, you know, in many cases, a person might be looking at many different companies and the first one or two with an offer in gets the advantage. So we have to be very careful about how we approach these things without cutting corners. We can't do it. And as hard as that is, and as much as it hurts, for example, when someone says, I just got to get this offer today, you know, to be competitive, there are many times where we have to say, we understand where you are. Unfortunately, we may not be able to meet this today deadline, for example. It's really rough to even have to say that out loud to you in this process, but we do have to balance it.
I really like that description, swift. Because you're dealing with people's lives and a big opportunity for someone to change their career, to join a new company. It's not something that you can just take for granted and just whip out an offer here or you know, put forward something here. It needs to be done with the respect and importance that it deserves, whilst also to move as swiftly as possible. I think that's a great point. When it comes to partnering with external recruitment businesses, search partners, what's the key thing of importance to you when you do that?
Insights. When I'm speaking with a partner, and I use that word very carefully. I know some places even use it to speak about their employees. They'll call them partners or colleagues, associates, or all kinds of words, but I use partner very seriously. And that means we're working with new information, new insights. You know, I was just on this weekend actually with someone who said, hey, heads up, I'm feeling something over here in this market. okay, thank you. You know, I was thinking about, you know, this thing, what do you think? And so being able to have that kind of insightful, it might only be 1 minute, it might be 3 minutes, but providing some insight that perhaps we're not thinking about. Ah, did you see this report over here? Let me send you a copy. Even better, frankly, because I think when people send you, for example, McKinsey put out a report on women in the workplace, right? It's a very big report, very large report. However, if someone sends you, hey, really interesting reading for you, I'm taking away these top three items, that's even more valuable. So slapping things around in email can be very difficult to maneuver when you're getting so many inputs on a daily basis. But when someone gives you insights in a bulleted format, I find that to be extremely helpful. And that's, for me as well, serving my clients internally and externally and my partners, as well as the team. We're constantly talking about how can we make this easy for people? How can we anticipate their needs? I would expect that, frankly, of a partner.
Yeah, real-time information that people are getting from the market, from other searches, from other positions they're working on, rather than waiting to the end of the year for those, you know, salary surveys or whatever, those things might end up being out of date at that stage, just giving you that firsthand insights. I think that's fantastic. Talking about that, especially around the, sort of the technology side of things, are there any tools, any piece of technology that you're using there to track people through your talent acquisition process?
We use a lot of tools that are familiar to people, and they should be, because if they're not familiar, then people aren't going to them. So we use tools like Indeed, Glassdoor, LinkedIn, Workday, Greenhouse. These are all tools that talent acquisition folks will be very familiar with. On the development side, internally, we utilize a learning management system called Bridge. We also have a learning experience system called Degreed. And one of the things I think that we have been able to do and have it's been supported is to frankly be high tech. And that was one of the things that I really loved about our conversations when we were speaking of the future of insurance. It was all about high tech. And I can recall those early discussions saying, if we're not able to put technology to work, I'm really not interested. I got to tell you, I'm coming out of high tech, right? So if we're not going to be able to tool people up with effective tools that don't rely on in-person trainings, because let's face it, those are not as common and not offered as often, and often are not specific to the needs of each person. So really utilizing those development tools that get at what I need right here, right now, so that I can skill up and be ready for that next role is critical, again, to that organizational development that we need. So it's no surprise, of course, that over the next few years, for most of us, 60% of our skills will be outdated. So how do we make sure that we get those skills updated so that we can then not only be ready for today, but also the future?
The recruitment process gives a very good and clear example of what that's going to look like in someone's career. So if they're an underwriter and you're hiring an underwriter, you know, if you've got a very slick talent acquisition process where a lot of things are automated, things are made just as easy as possible, that's going to bode well that the underwriting tools and technology is going to be there as well. I think if someone's interviewing and being told about all the technology and then you have a very clunky recruitment system, a very clunky TA system, I think sometimes, you know, the proof's in the pudding, that could be very important.
So true. I think eliminating friction is a constant goal, right, for all of us. When we're talking about looking for an opportunity, or when we're talking about, hey, just go on our website and take a peek, we want that to be very fast. And we'll send them a link, but we also don't want them wandering around and wandering through various pieces that are not going to help them and serve them. Frictionless is definitely a part of what we try to accomplish each day. We've also applied that high-tech platform with a deep partnership with our CIO, Tom Quinn. So we very much are on the same path. Silos are broken down. We build pathways, for example, that help their teams grow, which consequently help all of us grow. And those tools change so fast, for example. Of course, secure development, cloud, Snowflake, you know, all of these tools, did we know about them 10 years ago? You know, did we know about them even 5 years ago, right? Sometimes in the tech space specifically, we can see that skill movement even faster.
So important. Final question of the espresso round. What's the one lesson that your job has taught you over your career that you think everyone should learn at some point in their life?
I had a mentor who gave me this phrase when he was retiring. I said, "What is your piece of advice?" So I'm going to quote him, and rest in peace. He's no longer with us. But he said, "Don't make stuff up." And I said, "Well, I don't think we make stuff up. Do I make stuff up? I mean, tell me what's on your mind there." And he said, "What I find is, in general," I'm paraphrasing, "when people are asked a question that they don't know the answer to, sometimes they will default to making things up or they will overgeneralize." And so I've tried with our teams to be very careful with answers and make sure that we have those data points. For example, when it comes to engagement, I appreciate very much that we have all of these data points. So let's use them. But when someone says, "Our engagement is great," let's get specific about that, right? Like, what data points are we doing well? By how many points? Where are we not doing so well? And so let's give that balanced feedback. Let's not just make it up, which is really what he was referencing. Don't do these broad strokes where you make stuff up.
That is such great advice. I think applies to all life, but I think within your organization, that is definitely set by leadership. If you can show people that actually you don't necessarily need to know the answer now, or, you know, if you can get me that answer, or you can show that answer, I'd rather have the real answer than something that you're just going to try and blag now or just go into generals. I think that's really interesting. There's some books around being very direct in your approach and communications with people. And I think a lot of people actually appreciate that for sure. And I think insurance as well, being an honest and integrity-led industry as well, I think it's really, really key, whether that's internal stakeholders or working with your brokers or working with your policy holders. I think it's very, very important to sometimes just say, "Don't have that information to hand. I'll get that for you." I think that's great advice. Christina, we've almost reached the end of our time in the coffee house today. Time has gone really quickly. Before you go there, do you have one piece of closing advice for our listeners? And if there are insurance leaders, professionals looking for that next opportunity, how can they find those opportunities at Argo?
ArgoLimited.com is where we have those opportunities. Of course, a person can search via Indeed, also look through LinkedIn, you know, all the normal channels. Check out our information via Glassdoor. So all of these places are very common as a U.S. specialty company for folks to go to in the U.S. We think about that piece of advice. I think in general, don't over-engineer. It's very easy to get caught up in the detail and not pull back, zoom out, as they say, and simplify, right? So we've made a distinct effort to do that, certainly in our technology stack that's serving our clients who are really candidates in many cases or employees as they move along the journey, remove friction and keep it simple where at all possible.
And certainly echo that. Christina, thank you so much for your time today. It's been brilliant to have you in the Insurance Coffee House. Thank you for sharing the updated news and the opportunities there now at Argo. I think it's really exciting, obviously a great place to be at the moment. We look forward to seeing how things develop. So thank you for your time today.
A pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Insurance Coffee House with Nick Hoadley. Join us next time for another episode packed with insights and advice for senior leaders, C-suite executives, and ambitious insurance professionals. Stream all episodes at insurance-search.com.